At this political inflection point on this Super Tuesday, what can we learn from businesses on planning for this country's future? I'm David Brancaccio in New York, now the start of a Marketplace Morning Report project key to the election. How does this country get serious about long-term opportunities and threats, the ones that don't fit into a single federal budget or a single election cycle? Listen to what the late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut once said to me on national TV.
Look, I'll tell you, it's one thing that no cabinet had ever had is a secretary of the future. And there are no plans at all for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
It was Vonnegut's last in-depth broadcast interview, and since then, that idea of his has bounced around the internet, never quite developing into a fully-fledged meme. We have a secretary of commerce, of labor, of defense. Why not a secretary of the future to help politicians think harder about how today's actions might play out in 10, 20, 50 years? Sound weird? Well, it's not. Some big corporations already have them.
It really was my job to be the crazy one, to be the grit in the system. With the CEO and many of the top officials, it would be my job to come in and present a future that really wasn't quite rosy because the company needed to be prepared for that.
Brian David Johnson used to be the futurist at Intel, the microchip manufacturer. Now he does this at Arizona State's Center for Science and the Imagination.
Some of it is a mix between looking at social science, the progression of technical research, looking at economic data, sometimes even looking at history, and looking out and saying, okay, based on all these things, where do we want to be 10 years from now? And sometimes more importantly, what's the future we want to avoid?
The shingle says CSO, Chief Sustainability Officer. They worry about CO2 and all sorts of things that could put the company, its customers, or our Earth out of business someday.
It encompasses lots of environmental issues, but also lots of social issues like product quality and safety or workplace practices and robust supply chains, as well as governance factors as well.
George Serafim studies this at the Harvard Business School. He says secretaries of the future deal in three stages: compliance, making sure their company's not breaking the law, which is always nice. Second stage, efficiency, boosting profits by saving energy and other resources. Then, maybe, if the company is really serious, what he calls the innovation stage.
Integrating sustainability into the core of the business, they are looking to address bigger problems in societies.
Which isn't easy.
Most of the companies are right now stuck in the efficiency stage.
Among the companies that are weaving the future into their very makeup, Serafim suggests, is L'Oréal of Paris.
New L'Extraordinaire Lip Lacquer, a fusion of luxurious oils and intense color pigments.
Yes, we could have a discussion about cosmetics and body image or animal rights advocates wanting more proof L'Oréal is, as advertised, cruelty-free. But it's also a company that insists on metrics to show that all of its products are getting better for society and the Earth.
A chief sustainability officer is basically a change manager.
Alexandra Pault has held the post at L'Oréal for 4 years now.
You have people who are very convinced. It relates very easily to their values and what they understand of the way the society and our environment is evolving. You have people who are less convinced and more hesitant. You have, of course, people who are against it. You have to create a vision, create a sense of urgency. You have to make the way clear.
There's a return on investment, just not this minute.
The short-term ROI on sustainability is not the right question to ask because we are not on a 3 months line. What is very clear is we have to develop supply chains that are sustainable, responsible, creating income for farmers, for communities, because it's the only way that we can sustain on a long term.
So if the next president were to appoint a cabinet member to worry about future generations, what would be job one? America's pension system, the debt, environmental policy, training for better jobs? We'll be asking you and making some suggestions of our own as the campaign year progresses. You can start tweeting your ideas using hashtag SecretaryFuture. Let's do some numbers. Now, the 100 share index in London is up 0.7%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 0.9% range. There's been an incremental but significant legal victory for Apple. A federal judge in New York did not buy a government argument for forcing Apple to open up data locked into an iPhone. Now, this is not the same case we've been covering with the San Bernardino killers, but a separate one involving drug dealing. On this is Marketplace's Andy Euler. This case out of Brooklyn, Andy, could have some influence?
Yeah, that's right, David. The ruling essentially said the government was trying to assert an authority that it just doesn't have. But at the heart of the issue is this larger debate we've been talking about a lot, privacy and security. Now, what the New York judge said is that Apple isn't conspiring to keep the data on these phones inaccessible. They're just trying to stay out of these kind of cases. Now, Apple's hoping this particular ruling has far-reaching effects. It's the first ruling dealing with this sort of security issue, but is a bit different than the San Bernardino case. This one deals with a drug dealer, not homicide, but it could still set precedent.
And the broader issue is not going to get resolved soon.
That's exactly right. Both the government and Apple are assuming this legal battle will stretch out over years. They said they're even preparing for this issue to reach the Supreme Court. In fact, today, Apple's going to be on Capitol Hill arguing that the result of ordering the company to make data accessible in the San Bernardino terrorism case, the government would be ordering the company to weaken the security of all of its products. So they're saying this has really far-reaching effects, whatever happens.
Andy, thank you. And we've been reporting on the London Stock Exchange working on a $28 billion merger with its German counterpart. There's word now that the parent company of the New York Stock Exchange may try to thwart that with a bid of its own for London. Separately, the Wall Street Journal is saying the Chicago Mercantile Exchange might also try to woo the British. Amid all this attention, stock in the London Stock Exchange is up nearly 8% right now. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.